From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. In the U.S., COVID-19 hit assisted living facilities and nursing homes harder than anywhere else, claiming an outsized number of lives.
At the COVID tracking project, they reported that even though less than 1%
of the population
lives in long-term care facilities.
That's nursing homes and assisted living centers.
But have had 40% of the COVID deaths.
40% of virus-related deaths.
The federal government and the CDC didn't have accurate numbers about how many people were dying across the country, but the COVID tracking project did. Their data showed that in the first year of the pandemic, about 175,000 people had died from the virus in these facilities. And that data proved crucial. Federal officials used that information to help justify their decision about where to send vaccines first.
As of last week, those people account for more than a third of all COVID deaths in this country.
Today, we're bringing you the story of the COVID tracking project and asking why it had to exist in the first place. Epidemiologist Jessica Malati Rivera takes it from here.
The COVID tracking project collects data from each state every day and puts it into one central database for the nation. But what we publish is only as good as what states provide. So to motivate states to give us the most complete data, we start giving them letter grades.
Our data has been given an A-plus grade.
The COVID tracking project gives Arizona an A-plus.
A-plus.
An A-plus rating from
an
the COVID. An
A-plus from the COVID tracking project.
We're grading states because there are no national data standards, which makes it really hard to know things like, are cases rising in your state? And how does that compare to states around you? It's the kind of stuff that citizens expect the CDC to provide in the middle of a pandemic.
The idea that you wouldn't be able to tell people how many people had COVID around them while asking them to take extraordinary measures in their own lives, that you were just sort of like, well, probably some, but you wouldn't actually have a number. Like, that struck me as like completely unhinged.
That's Alexis Madrigal, co-founder of the COVID Tracking Project.
There was a need for data and data analysis that the CDC refused to provide. And it opened up all this space that other people filled. So some of those people are the New York Times and Hopkins and ourselves.
Since early April, Johns Hopkins University has been publishing our state testing data on their website. But then in mid-May, they do something different with it. They start using the data to build an automated tool, a test positivity tracker.
Hopkins came up with this like kind of testing tracker, which we just used COVID tracking project data and did like some very basic calculations of like positivity rate and things like that.
In other words, how many COVID tests are coming back positive? Do a lot of people have COVID in your state?
At first, that seemed fine, but we came to really feel and heard from states that that tracker was causing a lot of problems.
States are using these automated numbers calculated by the Johns Hopkins tracker to determine travel restrictions. Because the data is so inconsistent, the calculations are not always right. In July, the tracker makes North Dakota's positivity rate look really high, which causes anyone coming from North Dakota to be put on New York's mandatory quarantine list. North Dakota's governor, Doug Burgum, talks about it in a press conference.
Johns Hopkins is using the COVID tracking data. I think there's state-by-state comparison issues. There was some data from North Dakota that wasn't accurate in there.
The same thing happens in Rhode Island. Producer Kara Oler is working on the COVID tracking project at the time, and she's been communicating with state public health departments for months. One morning, she gets a voicemail from a government official.
Hi, Kara. I work in the governor's office at Rhode Island.
The Johns Hopkins tracker calculations are triggering a travel warning for Rhode Island. A mandatory quarantine goes into place for Rhode Islanders traveling to certain states.
This is really impacting travel restrictions for Rhode Islanders who've now just been put on the list for Massachusetts and Connecticut, our two neighboring states. I really need to escalate this. If you could do anything to help me out, that would be great. Thank you. Bye.
Let's pause for a moment. The COVID tracking project didn't cause the travel restrictions for the people of Rhode Island. We collected their data, and Rhode Island did great. We gave them an A+. But the problem was they weren't reporting on Sundays. So when they played catch-up on Mondays and entered the weekend data into the system, the Johns Hopkins tracker calculated what looked like a spike in positive tests. But it was really just because public health officials took Sunday off, hence the travel ban.
You basically had COVID tracking project data filtered through this dashboard that we couldn't control, dictate the policies of states. And it was a disaster.
The snafus that are causing travel restrictions eventually get worked out. But this whole thing could have been avoided. All any state needed was clear guidance from the CDC on when and how to report data and how not to use data. Basic data standards.
Is anybody keeping an eye on Tennessee?
To the extent that I am, yes.
Yeah, I've checked it a bunch of times too. And...
Yeah, me too.
Every day for a whole year of the pandemic, the COVID tracking project collects data for the country.
Texas had another weird drop.
Sounds like Texas.
So we may need to add a note for Texas.
We provide a data backbone for two presidential administrations. Our work is used for vaccine analyses and national COVID response plans. Congress uses our data about nursing homes. And the NAACP uses our race and ethnicity data in lawsuits with states and the federal government.
Elliot, can you look at Idaho thread?
Utah is okay.
Checking Tennessee.
New Mexico just went, actually.
It's hard, but satisfying work. Once people start volunteering, it's tough to put it down.
Everyone who has been working on it did so at significant cost to their personal lives.
Everyone's made insane personal sacrifices. I'm not the only one who's like walked away from school and my graduation, everything. So I don't know, like, I would love to take away any of like the negative repercussions of the work here, but I don't really think you can.
We're a tight-knit organization and kind of trauma-bonded by all the work we do. Feels like we've been doing this for years. We celebrate birthdays, mourn losses. We meet each other's kids and pets.
My cat is making noise. I'm just waiting him to stop.
This dog is barking.
Mine. Darcy.
We make sense of the pandemic and what's happening across the globe together.
This project and all of our people are like so integrated into like my way of processing the world.
Through it all, we keep gathering the data.
I checked Florida and Texas.
Checking Tennessee.
So Colorado and Tennessee, outstanding.
Okay, North Dakota.
And then we decided it was time to stop.
For the last year during this pandemic, the data compiled by the folks at the COVID Tracking Project has been a huge part of our coverage of COVID.
The COVID Tracking Project went pencils down exactly a year after it started.
Last night's update was the final day of data collection for the COVID tracking project.
We didn't stop because the CDC data was so amazing and then we became redundant. We just had to.
They're now stepping back because they believe that this should be a job for the federal government.
Volunteerism has this great place in American society, but it should not be the basis of our nation's infrastructure, especially when we're talking about the response to a public health emergency.
This is stolen time. From families and jobs and school and lives. And also so many of us were so exhausted.
People had full-time jobs and families that they needed to get back to. And it just required hundreds of people kind of dropping everything else in order to do this. But we were still worried about the future of COVID data.
The hospitalization numbers came back up in New Jersey.
Somebody can have Tennessee. I have a really hard time getting it to show up for me.
Georgia started reporting antigen tests.
Alabama didn't update.
Iowa is done.
On March 7th, 2021, we tweeted out the day's COVID data for the last time. Alexis and co-founder Aaron Kassane gathered people together for a final goodbye.
With our last few minutes here, I just want to say one last thing to you all about this project. The first step in the accountability that I think we all want to see is assessing the toll. It's counting.
In 1 year, we had counted more than 28 million cases and more than 500,000 deaths. But along the way, there was a historic public health breakthrough, the COVID-19 vaccines. We saw vaccines being distributed to people most at risk, and deaths started to slow down. It gave us hope.
And now things are getting better. We're looking into a hopeful future where the government does its job, where the pandemic eases and ends. And thank you all. That's it. That's our last all hands, I think. Aaron, got anything?
Thank you, everyone. That's the whole story. Thank you all.
All right. Bye.
All right, guys. That will be a wrap on Pope Shift.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Take good care.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Data to the people.
Bye. Bye.
When the COVID tracking project shut down, we knew a lot of the things we built, like the COVID racial data tracker and the long-term care tracker, wouldn't continue. And so our nation's understanding of the impact on these communities would become largely invisible. There was a real sense of loss, but there was also hope that some of the systems that the government put into place throughout the first year of the pandemic would carry the nation forward. We saw federal COVID hospitalization data go from non-existent to covering almost every hospital by the end of the year.
It is important that we look at both what worked and what didn't work and address those issues in real time to save American lives.
That's Dr. Deborah Birx testifying in front of Congress in 2022. She was the coordinator of the White House Coronavirus Task Force at the beginning of the pandemic. Her team built the system that got 98% of hospitals reporting.
CDC wasn't going to do it. They wouldn't stand up that database. They wouldn't get 6,000 hospitals reporting. They believed that modeling was more accurate than the real-time data.
Dr. Birx spent decades in public health and much of her career working for the CDC. She says the agency needs a major overhaul to be ready for the next pandemic.
Over the last couple of decades, they became a historic looking backwards public health institution rather than a proactive, let's use data and even dirty data in real time to address major public health problems. They became much more theoretic public health rather than action-oriented public health.
Dr. Birx says it will take more than adding people and funding to fix a broken public health system.
Our systems, the way we organized them, failed. And we just have to be that honest. It failed us at the beginning. It's failing us now. We still have more deaths than most other countries that are developed as much as we are. We are failing. And until we admit to ourselves, whatever we put in place is still not enough, we're just going to keep doing more of the same. So don't ever blame it on people and funding. That is just an excuse. CDC's issues are really around decisions and lack of accountability.
In August 2022, the CDC announced that the agency needed a reset.
After a review found missteps in the COVID response, Dr. Rochelle Walensky has announced major changes for the agency are on the way.
Coming up after the break, Jessica interviews former CDC Director Rochelle Walensky.
We're about 60,000 public health workers in deficit. Our laboratory infrastructure within the nation, across the nation, has been underinvested in, and our data systems across the nation have been underinvested in.
You're listening to Reveal.